This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Well, we tried to keep the... Okay, Matt, so I missed on that one. We try to keep the show nice and busy, ladies and gentlemen. The things coming your way, different topics. Today, we kind of we're getting into the middle of the month, perfect timing, and recovering on New Year's, where we think, oh, I've fallen off on my resolution, or I haven't been able to get out too much with restrictions, or just even your restricted budget, maybe. So yep. I think we've had a very nice theme through the show today, and hopefully people... relate and hopefully feel a little more empowered to pat themselves on the back with their progress.
I like that. Yeah, feeling empowered because, as I said during one of our New Year's resolutions conversations, you might be feeling like, why bother, right? Because it's just kind of the mindset we're all really leaning into, with ups and so many unknowns, so many ups and downs. But true, today's conversations have been very empowering.
Yeah, and as we heard through also part of that theme, is the things people started, projects, hobbies that they may have gotten into. Speaking of hobbies, on our monthly collections segment, we explore the things that people are collecting and the stories behind the sentiments as well, of course, behind those collections. It could involve your hobbies as well. Susan Loeb is a member of the PAL Reading Board, along with Danielle McLaughlin and Ramya Muthan over there. And Danielle has told us a lot about Susan's interests with knitting, and we're here to learn a little bit more, for example. Susan, welcome to the show. Nice to talk to you again. It's been a while.
Hi, Kelly. Hi, Ramya.
Hello.
So,
hi.
You have been knitting for over 60 years, an incredible long time. What got you started?
Well, I joined Brownies when I was a wee girl, and they told us what to expect over the next several years of being a brownie. And one of them was I'd have to produce a knitted square. And so I went racing home and told my mother I had to learn to knit right now. And she was good enough to give me some advice and teach me.
Wow. I'm curious about the advice and that teaching, and as a young lady, your patience.
No, I think that's one of my superpowers. But I know lots of women who have similar stories. It was something that we did. My grandmother's knitted, my mother knitted. It was something that you did. I mean, I remember when my sister was born, she's 10 years younger than I am, and my mother went off to the hospital and left a bonnet or a sweater or something unfinished, and I undertook to finish it before my sister came home. So it was a different time. It was something that people did.
For a lot of practicality.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So,
I mean,
go ahead.
Nowadays it's not true that you can buy things, that you can make things more cheaply than you can buy them. But I think there was a time when it was definitely true.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, you were doing it because you knew that it was going to come about for you anyway, with the brownies. But then did you, like, fast forward to now, did you think that it was going to be such a huge undertaking that you would, you know, be knitting and so deeply rooted into it for so long?
No, I think it's just part of my makeup. I like doing things with my hands. So I like cooking. I like gardening. I like knitting. I find them all very meditative pastimes. So it's part of that, more than just knitting apart from anything else.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Susan, at that time, and as you grew older, and we're talking a time when it was kind of, as I said a little while ago, really kind of at a necessity, a practical thing to do. What kinds of things can you fill our audience in that were the regular things that were being knitted at different times of the year, different, you know, demands and things that you needed to do, that were the must-do things that just had to be done and had to be knitted?
Well, hats and mittens and socks and sweaters. And, I mean, at this moment, I'm wearing socks and a sweater that I made. When I go out, I'll put on my mittens and my hat that I made. My grandmother knitted for the First World War. The Women's Institute knitted socks for the soldiers overseas.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Some families, large families, had knitting machines to crank out socks. And there would be a domestic servant, if the families were wealthy enough, there would be a domestic servant whose job it was to manufacture socks for the family. Mm. Because they weren't mass-produced.
They weren't mass-produced. And now when you think about knitting as a, quote, hobby, like, a lot of people might check into what it's like and get all the tools and go through some maybe introductory lessons or courses. But then I don't know if a lot of us have the patience, like you're saying, to think of it as just a meditative activity and to do it that way. You know, but you're part of a lot of different knitting communities, which we'll get into. But any other projects that you get into, like you mentioned your own socks and mittens and hats and sweaters, anything big that you've done?
I like making blankets for my younger friends who have babies.
Nice. That's awesome.
Hmm.
I'm
just so blown away when you think back to the difference. And now so many people knit for the hobby, the interest, sit with a group, or for those Christmas items they want to give people. Am I kind of right there, Susan? Is that where, when you think back, as you said, now today you can't knit cheaper than... for things that people mm-hmm. need, then you could go out and buy. So it is more that hobby or that, hey, I made this for you kind of gift versus the necessity of years gone by.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So I mentioned the community involvement. There's a few different things we can touch on, but do you want to start with the Toronto Knitters Guild and what they do and what you do with them?
It's just it's an interest club. It's a not-for-profit organization. They've been meeting for decades, once a month, always in public, live, but obviously the last 2 years it's all been virtual. From September through June, they get interesting speakers to come, and often a yarn vendor will come, and people like to, it's, for many people, knitting is a very social activity. They like to be in a group. They like to sit and chat and work away at their projects. And the Knitters Guild has done that. And then every year they also put on a yarn fair called the Toronto Knitters Guild Frolic, which, again, for the last couple of years has been virtual and is going to be virtual again this year. But it's typically a celebration of yarn and dyers and designers and everything in that fiber sphere.
During those talks, when you have the guests, what kind of thing empowers you? I don't even want to say empowers. Let me take that word back. What things do they discuss are the things that you grab onto that intrigue you the most that we would say, well, what's the guest speaker going to speak about? It's kind of like in the group, it's nice to socialize, to talk, but is there tips, is there hints and things like that that are being passed on to maybe somebody who's newer or just something you do that someone says, I've never knitted that. Tell me how you get around this with that.
Yeah, it varies a lot. The programmers are really good at covering a wide range of, so I remember a woman from the University of Toronto came to talk about knitting for refugees from war-torn Syria. And she was looking for knitters to make things for people arriving in Canada who needed winter gear. Somebody else came from Black Creek Pioneer Village and talked about dyeing with natural products and how yarn would have been produced in those times at Black Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Other people have their own businesses and they talk about their inspirations for colors and their inspirations for patterns or for designs. Some people are very practical and they'll come and they'll talk about how to make a sweater that really fits. Because some people may have difficulty, they may be put off because, well, I did all that work and it didn't even fit. So, There's a big range. There's a big range. And so it's always interesting. You always learn something that you didn't know.
And what is it for you? Like when you get excited about knitting, is it more project based or the kinds of yarn that you're using or like where this project is going to go? You talked about, you know, making gifts for people and things like that. Is there something that puts you on to the next part for knitting?
Well, there is a discussion that has gone on about project knitting versus process knitting. And I'm very much a process knitter. I don't particularly care what I'm doing as long as my hands are busy. Other people will say, no, I want to use this yarn to make this sweater, and that's my focus. So I have a lot of things sitting around, and I'll just pick them up from time to time depending on what I feel like doing. But it's just to keep my hands busy. It's something I like to do.
Is there something long-term that you haven't quite finished yet that's just still being picked up and knitted?
The technical term for that is a WIP, a work in progress, and I have many WIPs.
and what makes you say, okay, I'll get back to this one, or I'll move off of that? I mean, is it, again, necessity or something else that you think, oh, I got to get that done? Is that really what takes one away from one thing to the other?
No, I try not to bring guilt into it. I try to bring it in as just, I haven't done that for a while. Because sometimes things are tricky, or they're reluctant to go the way they should. So you just put them away for a little while and let them think about their sins, and then you can bring them back.
Yes. what do you, if you're not, like, you know, in the social group situation, what is your favorite outside of when you're on your own? Is it watching TV and knitting, or what?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I would say, and preferably watching TV that doesn't interest me very much. so if I'm watching a very gripping drama or something, I'll find, I made a mistake, you know, an hour ago, and I have to rip it all back.
Oh, no.
So I really like to watch curling while I knit, because you can listen and then you can look up from time to time if anything's happening and the knitting. Mm. I would say curling is my favorite TV for knitting.
No making mistakes when they're yelling at you, hurry, hard, hurry. You're not like getting your fingers moving faster.
She separates herself.
That's just background noise. Yeah.
You just dismiss it.
Yeah.
So, Susan, we've talked about knitting as something that potentially blind and low vision people can pick up, knitting, crocheting, you know, just hobbies and things in the past little while. But I'm curious, when you're putting it away, you know, when you're putting your WIPs away, are there ways that you organize them? Or is it just, you know your mess, you know your project, so you know what it's going to be like when you pick them back up? Or do you have a system in labeling and other kind of things to keep yourself organized with these projects?
I try to keep the pattern with the project, because you can get into a real mess if you're stuck and you go back and you can't figure out where you were and you can't find the pattern. And then that's a sad day. But I don't have any particular.
How about putting it away?
I should have a better system, but I don't.
Well, and that's
as long as you know your system, right?
Exactly. And what brings me to think, well, hold on. If you're putting it down, you're putting it away. When you come back to it, is there kind of little maintenance, anything that things have happened to it while it sits resting, waiting to go, or when it's been put away? Have you learned some secrets of, I'm going to put this aside now, but I don't want to come back to, I don't know, any gnats, snares, whatever?
The worst thing that could happen is you might have a moth infestation, which that has not happened to me as yet. So you try to put them away in a plastic bag, or you try to put them away clean, so that to discourage any kind of infestation. Because that's a sad day for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
just thinking about that. I never really thought. I thought, the worst that'll happen is something undoes maybe a little or tight. I never thought about that. Come back and the moths are, well, what are you doing here? You left this alone for a while. Beat it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dinner.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Susan, before we get wrapping up on our chat with you today, do you want to tell us about Ravelry AMI.com. It seems like a really interesting platform.
Yeah, it is a platform that's free to the user. So anybody can join. There are members from all around the world. Many languages are represented, many nationalities. There's a lot of different groups. For any kind of affiliation you might imagine, you can probably find a group on Ravelry. And as I looked it up just to see, and there are a number of groups that say that they are for and by individuals with visual or other perceptual deficiencies. So, but even within that, even if you're not in one of those groups, you can search on Ravelry for patterns that are accessible or suitable for low vision, because there's different tricks that people can use in terms of the size of the font they use for the pattern or the contrast, et cetera, et cetera. So it's I cannot say for sure how accessible the whole platform would be, but I know for myself, I've modified it so that I've changed the background, and they improved it a few years ago and put in lots of things that people didn't like and said they were triggering seizures and various things because it had a lot of moving parts. So mm-hmm. now it is possible. They responded to the criticism, and now it is possible to modify the interface, as the individual needs it. But I haven't actually tried to see how it works, say with a screen reader or something like that. But I know it is possible to find patterns, and it's possible to find community on Ravelry that would be of use to someone with a visual impairment.
Fantastic. Susan, thanks so much for sharing. I'm going to suggest that also the thing you probably don't listen to is audiobooks while you're trying to knit, unless it's a really, a book you know is going to be boring.
Yeah.
You know what? Like, audio takes over my world. I don't even listen to audiobooks in the car because I'd be off the road. I'm the kind of person, I used to listen to Peter Zosky in Morningside, and I'd have to pull over from time to time because I couldn't
Susan,
drive.
That's great. Susan, thanks for making time and joining us on Collections and Hobbies today. Appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure.
Bye. Susan Loeb joined us here on Collections and Hobbies to talk about knitting. Thanks to Danielle McLaughlin for the tip to bring her on, as she is a 60-year seasoned knitter. We'll be back in a moment to wrap up the show.
You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.